Hello, and welcome to episode 5 of the NAFcast. It's been a little while since the last one, so there's absolutely loads to talk about. We're going to review the Euro Bowl, including the captain's meeting and the ongoing effects of that. There's a new website to mention, the Blood Bowl blog. We're going to talk about the committee meeting with the NAF minutes and what the committee are up to. We'll have a quick discussion of rankings and the database and keep people up to date with what's going on there and how those work, because I don't think we've talked about those yet much. And we've been dipping into the Cyanide Leagues a bit, and so we'll talk about those. There's also a big update to Fumble. Those of you who play on Fumble will know about that, but it's worth mentioning that to the Blood Bowl world as a whole as well. While this podcast is sponsored by the NAF, any inaccuracies are my own, and any views expressed are my own as well. It shouldn't be taken as gospel from NAF committee. Euro Bowl is a great place to start. On November the 8th and 9th, 250 Blood Bowl coaches convened in Ostend in Belgium for the third largest Blood Bowl event ever. There was a 144-player national team tournament, and at the same time a 120-player open tournament made up of teams of three. It was really well organised, and the vast majority of players were staying in the hotel that was hosting the tournament, which meant that loads and loads of them were in the bar at the weekend, each night of the weekend. Competing this time, we had Austria, Belgium, Denmark, England, France, Finland, Germany, Hungary, Italy, Netherlands, Norway, Portugal, Scotland, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, Wales. And as that was only 17 teams, and you need an even number for a tournament like this, there was a team made up of the Pirates as well. In the run-up to the tournament, we noticed that England and Italy were on 3 wins each, and so wanted to get that fourth star on their T-shirts. Germany had never won, but were very keen to do so, despite because they got some of the best players in the world, but have never quite pulled it out of the bag. France have an amazing setup of Blood Bowl players, and they have massive amounts of strength and depth, and that showed in their Euro Open standings as well. We had hosting rights being battled for between Sweden, Portugal, Wales, Scotland. And because the Euro Bowl rules meant that the highest ranked team out of those would host in 2016. There was also the captain's meeting on Friday night, who decided that 2017 hosting rights would also be up for grabs, and so the second place out of those would host in 2017. People arrived on the Friday from all over the country and from the world as well, as Sangraal made the trip from Australia just for this. He was part of the Euro Open. After a bit of dinner, we had the opening ceremony, and this was a bit differently, in that they had the balls out of the bag kind of way, for want of a better phrase. They had taking balls out of a bowl, so they chose all the home teams. Well, the home teams, the one side of the draw first, and then went on to choose the second half of the draw to see who was playing them. So it sort of built the excitement a bit, and then Scotland versus England came out of the bag for sort of game 5. Which is pretty exciting. So everyone had the night to stew over who are they going to play in the morning. There was lots of smack talk in the bar, as you'd expect. And as it got late into the night, people had a nice chat about that whole thing. Straight after the draw, there was the captain's meeting. And I'll talk about that a little more in a minute. But the captain's meeting was fun's not quite the right word, but it was interesting having people from like 17 nations all gathered in one room trying to thrash out a few different points. And everyone was really sort of cheerful about it. They were really, I don't know, well-mannered's not quite the right word, but it was really done in a really nice atmosphere with everyone trying to work together to work out what the best thing was to do with Euro Bowl going forward. As I say, more about that later. On the Saturday, everyone turned up in their matching uniforms, and there were two huge rooms. So if you imagine, if you've been to the NAF Championship or the Chaos Cup, you see one of these big rooms. But this had two huge rooms just next to each other. So one of them had the top half of the Euro Open and the bottom half of the Euro Bowl, and the other one had vice versa, so the top half of the Euro Bowl and the bottom half of the Euro Open. There was a big screen displaying. And at this point, it was unveiled that there was going to be a fantastic new idea, which was live streaming one of the tables from each round. So the referees would choose which game might be of interest. So it might be between two really good players, or it might be a critical game for the Euro Open or for the Euro Bowl. And then that would be put on YouTube. And that had quite a fair few views. And that's definitely something that's going to be replicated. I really recommend that anyone who's doing a tournament in somewhere where there's Wi-Fi should have a look at setting that up. And I think we'll probably start with the NAF Championships, really hoping to get that going for that. Score was being used to enter the results. There was obviously two versions going, one for the Euro Open and one for the Euro Bowl. Did take a little bit of fiddling out to go with, because one of the problems with Score is that it can't do bonus points for a team win, and that's not one of the setups. But the Euro Bowl captains had decided previously that that's what they wanted the scoring setup to be. So we had to do something to make that work, which made it a little bit more manual than you'd ideally want. When you're using Score, ideally you want to just be able to enter the scores of each round and then let it work out all the standings and everything like that. As soon as you start having to enter extra points, it does make it a little bit more arduous. So we had the three games on the Saturday where people battling for position. And at the end of day one, France were in the lead, closely followed by Switzerland and England. In the battle for hosting, Scotland were facing off Sweden in game four. And down the bottom, Wales and Finland were battling for the spoon. Day two really was where the key results came through, to be honest, in that England beat Denmark 6-2 in their game four. There were a couple of other interesting results. There was an Iberian face-off between Portugal and Spain, and that was one of the YouTube games. And because France only managed a 4.5-3.5 over Switzerland, because they were in the top two positions, it meant that England took up pole position. Lunchtime on day two was when the best painted results, not the best painted results, the best painted nominees were put up. There were six teams chosen from the 250 teams available. So anyone who was nominated did absolutely fantastically well. There's a nice selection, some on display bases, some just the teams themselves. There were some extra assistant coaches and a load of other accessories, really, in the way that some people go that extra mile when doing best painted. The general pick, and the one that won it in the end, was Tufane's Halflings. Apologies for any mispronunciation. And this was a halfling team that had a little greenhouse with them, with some tree men in it. And I think it was growing some baby tree men. And there was all sorts of stuff going on there. There was an awesome dwarf team, which won best painted at the NAF Championship. There was a lovely Khemri team with a display base. There was an elf team, I think it was Pro Elves, which was painted like Harlequins, which I'm always really impressed when people can pull that one off and make it look nice. And then there were a couple of other teams as well. There was a human team, which I think from Team Scotland, which was particularly nice as well. You can see all photos of those on the NAF site. As well as photos, well, speaking of photos, photos were uploaded all the way through the weekend onto the Euro Bowl Facebook group. I know some people don't use Facebook, but it is quite a quick way of getting photos out to people. And following the Euro Bowl weekend, there are now 350 members on that Euro Bowl Facebook group. So from 2016 sort of onwards, it's going to be a really helpful way of building excitement and getting the information out there to people. As well as that, the information appeared on Talk Fantasy Football all weekend. Tom did a brilliant job of keeping things updated there. And so people around the world were able to follow what was going on. After lunch, which is amazing, lunch was really good all weekend. Few people didn't like fish much, which caused them a few problems. But in general, we got three-course meals all the way through and superb breakfasts, which is important for a Blood Bowl tournament because there are a few people who like their food quite a lot. England won round five by consolidating their position with another big win over Switzerland. And Denmark took revenge on their fourth round beating Scotland 6-2. Including one of the live stream games. The France-Italy game went narrowly to Italy, which meant that any win for England over Italy in the final round would give them the championship. In fact, they probably could have got away with a tie, but as it was, they did manage the win over Italy, which is enough to make England champions. Well done to them. You could see the full results on the NAF site. The Euro Open was taken by the Lutèce Noobs, one of the many, many strong French teams there. We're going to be heading to Sweden in 2016 because they were the highest placed of the nations that hadn't hosted yet. And we're going to be going to Portugal in 2017, who are half a point behind Sweden. Massive amount of thanks is due to all the organisers. There are probably a team of 12 overall organising, who were headed up by Driesfield, who talked to us about it in the previous podcast. There were a couple of people working very hard on the scores all weekend, and Tom updating the media all the way through. And then there were loads of refs hanging around, and everything went pretty smoothly. Driesfield is going to incorporate everything he's learned about organising this massive tournament into a large tournament handbook. And that's going to be really helpful, I think, for Euro Bowls going forward. And first of all, for the NAF World Cup, which is going to be taking place in Lucca in Italy in November 2015. A little bit more about that later. One of the necessary bits of admin that needs to take place at every Euro Bowl is the captain's meeting. And this year I had the dubious privilege of taking minutes of this, which was slightly hampered by me being given a Belgian keyboard just a couple of minutes beforehand. So, which was very kind of the host to provide that, but it did mean that the Q and the A were in the different places and the M had moved, which when you're touch typing makes things a little bit tricky. But we managed to get something comprehensible out of it, and there were a few reasonable decisions made. The thrust of the captain's meeting this year was that we're sort of running out of countries that haven't hosted before. And that's one thing to think about. And the other thing to think about was about getting the sort of unwritten rules of the Euro Bowl written down and agreed. Because everyone sort of knew what they were, that you had to have six players from a particular nation to be able to host in the future. And that it was the UEFA way of qualifying to speak to a represented country. But it was worth getting all those written down and agreed. So this year it was Scotland, Wales, Hungary, Sweden and Portugal who were going to be hosting. I think I didn't mention Hungary before, so apologies for that. That was because Norway and Switzerland and Finland were eligible to host but didn't want to put themselves forward at this stage because it is a massive undertaking, arranging a 250-player tournament. So all 17 nations were represented, and it was chaired by Beppe, and everyone got a bit of a say. It was a little bit tricky because the conversation did take place in English, so a few of the captains had translators and extra people in the room, and it was reasonably carefully chaired, so that everyone did get their say. So the main decisions were that the future hosts would have a couple of years to organise the tournament rather than just 1 year. And this meant that for this year only, the hosts for 2016 and 2017 were going to be chosen. And then from then on, it would be whoever was highest ranked out of the teams that hadn't hosted before that would get to host in 2 years' time. And so that meant that this year, the joys of Portugal actually get 3 years to organise the Euro Bowl, which should be plenty of time for them. Because we've got the World Cup in 2015, and there's never a Euro Bowl when the World Cup is taking place. And then Sweden won it in 2016, so they can get going with their organising right now. There's absolutely loads of minutes on there then, and anyone who wants to can obviously have a look at those. But those were the main decision. And then Purple Goo offered, on behalf of England, to write up the unwritten rules of Euro Bowl. And those are starting to appear, and those are being discussed in the Captain's Forum now. So if you think you should be in the Euro Bowl Captain's Forum, but you aren't, it might be worth having a look on there, and particularly if you haven't contributed to the discussion yet. That is definitely worth doing. There will be a captain's meeting at the World Cup, even though the World Cup isn't particularly a national event. There will be a specially organised Euro captain's meeting for the next time. I guess the unwritten rules we ratified there. We touched on it a little bit already, but the NAF committee had a meeting in October, and those minutes are available now. It was mentioned that they raised corn as a discussion point and had a little chat about it, but no further decisions are being made at the moment. There are a couple of people not at that meeting. So the corn decision was made in, I think it was January 2013. So it's a little bit while now, and there is a certain amount of data now available. And so it is still on the NAF agenda, and it is still being considered. There are strong opinions both ways. I think the data, and this is sort of my opinion, the data is showing out that they're certainly not an overpowered team. My personal data is that I've played about 10 games with them and lost the vast majority. But I don't think we can extrapolate from that to a wider viewpoint. I think the general feeling is that they are coming out as a higher tier 2 team, lower tier 1. You know, there's obviously a certain amount of blurring between those two, which is where Cyanide sort of wanted them, insofar as there was any sort of design decisions made there. That's about where they were supposed to be. Having a team with loads of starting frenzy and no starting block does make life a little bit tricky sometimes. They can get a bit better as they go on. And there's various threads on TFF and elsewhere about how best to develop them. So Korn are fairly firmly ensconced, I think, in the Cyanide game now, and people have a bit of information about them, and so it might be worth considering them for the NAF in future, but obviously people will have lots of thoughts about that. They also talked about the NAF World Cup. This is coming up in November 2015, and the rules pack and details will be available by the end of this year. There was a massive games tournament in the end of October that a few of the organisers were involved in, and so now that's out of the way, they've been giving a lot of thought to finalising the arrangements for the World Cup. And so look out for those appearing on the NAF.net nearer the time. There's been lots of work going on with the database, the sort of thing that people don't really notice or only notice when it goes wrong. The NAF database used to fall over quite a lot, and there used to be a few mistakes and errors in it. But actually now, the database does work really smoothly. So the web director has been working hard on that. And though it's not the sort of thing you'd necessarily notice, that is certainly going on in the background. There's also preparation for a new website, which will hopefully be coming online sometime in 2015, I think, from what I'm picking up. That's probably not official. But certainly there'll be lots of progress made on it in 2015 as well. And definitely, we're looking at a new way of scoring for the World Cup. I had a look at score and had a fiddle with it because there was a maximum number of individual teams, which I managed to remove by looking at the source code. I was quite pleased with myself until it was pointed out that one of the main problems of score is that you can only have one data entry point each. You can only have one data entry point. You can't enter two sets of data at the same time. And if you get a 500-person World Cup, that means that it takes probably an hour to enter the data. And that sort of delay in between games isn't really operationally viable. So that's definitely one of the things they're going to be looking at in the future. And lots of people have mentioned suggestions about being able to submit results online, especially as there's lots of mobile devices and so on. People should just be able to get their phone out and plug in what the score was and then have it automatically uploaded to the tournament. So I know that's definitely something that people are looking at. And greater integration with the website as well, with the rankings database, that it shouldn't necessarily really need to be a separate situation for uploading the results, because there are sometimes a few delays with that. They are also looking at building up a team for creation of documents and artwork. So we put a shout out on Facebook. There was a massive response to that. So we've got a few really talented people already who do lots of good work. I know Manticore Rich has put together the NAF championship rules for the last few years and made them look extremely good. And so people are just building up the amount of people. If you do ever want to get involved with anything to do with the NAF, it is your organisation, and it's very easy to get involved if you have particular skills. All you need to do is to put yourself forward. We have hundreds and hundreds of people all over the world who organise tournaments, and that's very much the heartbeat of the organisation. But then there's other stuff that goes on behind the scenes as well. People are always very, very keen to get new volunteers on board. As well as that, in the sort of tournament director section, there was discussion of a tournament series committee, because there are various, they're being called tournament series, that go on. For example, the Southwest Championship is one that takes place in England, and it's a whole linked series of events where your best result from the events counts towards an overall ranking for the year. I know there's an Italian championship as well, there's a Scottish championship, there's an American East Coast, I think, championship that goes on. And they get all the points from specific tournaments. You get, for example, 10 points for a win for the tournament, 8 points for a draw, and then carries on down like that. And various different people have different rules, and so I think there's going to be a review of those and getting those made into an official kind of NAF way. As well as that, there's going to be some standardised rules for the different variants of Blood Bowl, like Beach Bowl and Death Bowl. So just putting everything into sort of an official format, really. Speaking of volunteers, there are obviously lots and lots of Blood Bowl websites all over the world with different bits of information on. One of the new ones that's come to our attention is bloodbowlblog.com. The guy that runs that gym has been putting a lot of effort in, making it looking extremely shiny, and getting interviews with a few miniature manufacturers, and putting tournament reports and match reports up there, and lots of pretty pictures. And things like Lord Borak's help desk, which is something they used to have quite a while ago, I think, in White Dwarf or somewhere like that. And it's nice to have that sort of fluff going. Do definitely pay them a visit. One of the things that came out of the Euro Bowl matches, Euro Bowl is a major, which means it gets double ranking points. So I'm going to have a quick discussion of the rankings and how that works. For those of you who don't know, well, if you do know already, you could probably shut your ears, or you might learn something, who knows. Basically, it's based on the chess ELO system, where two players have a probability of beating each other. And if the database doesn't know anything about them, then that probability of beating each other will just be a half. And then as you win more games, your ranking goes up. And so if your ranking goes up to 180 and then you're playing against a new player, then the formula will assume that you have a high probability of beating that player. So your probability of winning might go up to 0.6. As your ranking goes above 200, your probability of winning can go up to 0.7, 0.8, and so on. And so if you then go on to beat that player, you do gain some points, but you will gain fewer points if you have a high probability of beating the player. And similarly, if you tie the game and you would have been expected to win usually, then you would lose some points. And if you tie a game against a higher ranked player, you will gain some points. And if you lose, you will always lose points, but you can lose different amounts of points based on how likely you were to win the game in the first place. The rankings came up after the Euro Bowl because we had our first ever 300 ranking. This is the first time this has happened in the history of the NAF because it's very, very difficult to get because you obviously need to have a very high ranking to start with. So the 300 ranking came from Jim Jiminy with his Wood Elves. And he went into the tournament with a very high ranking anyway of about 280. And so every time he played against a player, he had mathematically a very high probability of winning. So he managed to win 4 games and tie 2 games in the tournament. And each of his ties actually lost him around 4 points, which is the amount you would usually lose if you lost a game against a similarly ranked player. So you can see it was a little bit of a challenge. And everyone was a little bit sceptical about the ranking getting to 300. But once the numbers were crunched, it came out as 300.2, which is quite impressive. To get to that stage, he's had to win a couple of majors. He's won the NAF Championship and the Spike. He's won the World Cup, and he's won 2 Euro Bowls with England, all with Wood Elves, I think. So obviously it does take a little bit of dedication to what you've got. His rankings are worth noting in that he's one of only 2 or 3 people in the world, I think, who've done the 24, but as well as doing the 24, have a above 150 ranking with all the 24 as well. There's now up to about 45 who've done all 24 teams in NAF Championships. And so I think the next sort of big target to get to is having 100 above 150, which is obviously extremely challenging, including teams like Ogres and Goblins and Halflings. Especially as once your ranking starts to go down, it can be a bit difficult to turn it around. So the best way to get above 150 ranking in each tournament, with each race, is to do really well in your very first tournament with that race, and then park them there, really. So there are a couple of races where he's only played six or so games, but the stats are there and quite impressive. One of the fantastic things about going to Eurobowl was a chance to meet face-to-face a lot of the people that you only see online quite often and put faces to names. And this is a brilliant reason for going to these tabletop tournaments. One of the people I did manage to catch up with, was Doc Max, who runs the German Dungeon Bowl. So that's the German Major, which takes place around March, April time each year in Dusseldorf. He's taken on the organisation of it. I think he started last year, but we'll find out, because I managed to catch up with him for an interview. So this is my interview with Doc Max at the Eurobowl. Apologies for any sound quality, because we were in the bar. Okay, so I'm here at the Eurobowl with the main organiser of Dungeon Bowl.
Are you the main organiser, or just is there just one organiser?
No, I'm the one of the two organisers.
Okay, who's the other one?
The other one is Thomas Garthnight.
Right, okay.
On the forums.
Yeah. And it's Von Richten is doing some posting as well, is he? On TFF or not?
No.
It's just you two.
It's only... there is one guy, Jonas Roterstern Hofdahl.
Okay.
He is doing such works for us because he lives in Düsseldorf.
Okay.
And he's a good friend. We call him our lawyer because he's a lawyer.
So it's in Düsseldorf, Dungeon Bowl, is it?
Yeah.
Has it always been in Düsseldorf?
Not always, but the first two, I think, was in Cologne.
All right.
And then it moved to Düsseldorf because of GW, the headquarters of GW, moved from Cologne to Düsseldorf.
Right. How long has it been going for, Dungeon Bowl?
Next year is the 12th time.
Okay.
So it's since 2004.
Yeah. And how many is it since it left Games Workshop? Was that last year?
Last year was the first year without GW hosting it. We took it over the year before from Sasha, Coach Rattenfetzer.
Yeah.
He's done it, I think, 8 years or 7 years. Did a great job.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, fancy's moving on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's strange with the majors because it needs someone to organise them, does it? Most Blood Bowl tournaments belong to someone, don't they? And if that person stops organising them, then the tournament stops.
Yeah.
But the majors are different because... it passes on to someone else. Like Chaos Cup has passed on to someone else, hasn't it? And the NAF Championship has been organised by quite a few different people. I don't know how... And CanCon, I think, is just organised by whoever is there, really. So what's different about Dungeon Bowl?
The difference is about Dungeon Bowl with whole majors. If you've been to a big Blood Bowl tournament, a single tournament, there is not that big difference. But the biggest difference is the final table will host in a dungeon.
Excellent.
And that's actually more random than normal Blood Bowl.
Yeah, it is.
And we by our own, decides we need a judge at the Dungeon Bowl game for all the time. So I've been last year the judge for the game.
Yeah.
And I watched the entire game. Very hard to make no comments or jokes or something.
Absolutely.
Because, But that's the biggest difference.
Yeah. And do you think people like that? I guess people keep coming back, don't they?
Yes. I think there was... I talked with Sasha, the organizer before us, that he wants to change something, maybe play all Dungeon Bowl, but he came to the decision that that would be a tournament maximum of 20, maybe more.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be that big... major event anymore, and so the one game I think all of them who played it said, that's Dungeon Bowl.
Right.
That's it's. We've got a second thing we changed last year. We make a Stunty Cup final also in a dungeon.
Ah, okay. So that's a good idea. Yeah.
And I'll flag the finals, and I think the small ones needs to get the final as well.
Yeah.
So they have 5 rounds of heart beating after them, then they can make the final.
Yeah, because what you quite often get with good stunty teams is they'll be close to each other. So they might, like at the NAF Championships, they might both be table 40 or something. One might be table 40 and one might be table 41. And so they're watching each other, but it's not a real stunty final. But I like the idea of a stunty final after 5 games as well.
And what's maybe a big difference, you've got a Dungeon Ball final, and the Dungeon Ball can't go with the draw.
Right, yeah.
So the winner of the Dungeon Ball is the actual winner.
Yeah.
And we've got last year that the year before, last year, where GW hosted it, the person who lost the final were actually over the winner by points.
Right.
But he lost to him.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's decided on the table.
Yeah.
And no one can step from behind. It's only the top table can win it.
Yeah,
but I think at NAFC it's also.
Yeah, so whoever's in the final can win. And then they have what's called a league champion as well, so they get a shield for whoever ends up on the most points but isn't in the final.
Cool.
So aside from that, you have things like Best Painted.
Of course.
And do you have... so they're just played on normal pitches? Because there's another tournament, isn't there, where they have homemade pitches as well?
If you go to Germany to one tournament or two tournaments, what I want to point out is go to the B7.
Yeah.
It's in Böbling. There's every game is played on a customized pitch or stadium.
Yeah.
And it's 70 coaches every year. So it's nearly to Dungeon Bowl, not as big as Dungeon Bowl. But that's a tournament you must go to if you are in Germany or want to go there. That's
if you go on the German tour.
You must do that.
Yeah. So how many do you get at Dungeon Bowl? How many
Dungeon Bowl, since I come for the last 4 years, we've got every time 90 plus. That's the goal.
And people come from England, don't they?
We've got last year over 40 people coming from outside of Germany.
Wow.
That's quite amazing. Nearly to 50% foreigners. I don't know if any big tournament have that much. It's the location in Germany. Everything around
Düsseldorf is South Germany, isn't it?
No, it's northwest Germany. Okay. But it's a big airport. There's the Ruhrgebiet and the Rhineland. It's a big popular area.
Okay.
There live many people, and it's near to Belgium. If you go to West Germany or South Germany tournament, you would meet Belgians.
We
can't get rid of them.
They're everywhere. There's lots of them here as well.
Right.
But that's fair enough.
But we've got 12 English guys last year. I think the Swedes come with 4 guys last year. That's pretty amazing. I think 40 foreigners. I didn't expect that much, but it is.
Excellent. That's really good. So what's the German... Oh, sorry, before we go on to that, so when is it next year?
Next year is the 21st and 22nd of March.
All right, okay. And how much is it?
It's 55 euros.
55 euros.
Yeah, you get for that the venue, two times the meal, and you can stay. It's in a youth hostel, but it's not like a youth hostel. It's more like this hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a very, very good youth hostel.
So it's all on site.
You can go on site, but I think some of the British guys, they have their hotel where they stay every year, so they will go there. And it's not cheap as a youth hostel because it's in Düsseldorf. It's on the Rhine. It's a very, very nice location. We've got last year quite a problem with GW. They told us six weeks before the Dungeon Bowl that we can't hold it in the GW.
Oh, I see.
And then we must manage in 6 weeks to get another location.
That's not much fun.
Not much. And we've got a good location, and we have luck with the weather because some people are playing outside in a tent.
Oh, right, okay.
And in March, raining, it would be a very difficult weekend.
It's quite loud, wouldn't it, as well?
Yeah. Oh, funny thing, next to the outside where we were, there is the stadium of a football club,
right?
Second division. And they play that weekend against St. Pauli, that's from Hamburg, and they bring nearly 3,000 to 4,000 people. So, but
you managed to cope.
Yeah. We didn't get much from them, but it was a bit funny to see the on horse mounted police patrolling the fans.
You don't usually need that for a Blood Bowl tournament.
No. It was quite funny. But what I want to point out is we've got a big hall in the convention center there, and we've got I think 200 quadrat meters.
All right, square meters.
It's square meters, right? It's I think similar to the NAFC.
Location.
It's a bit smaller because with only 120 maximal.
So it's about the same size as the hall.
Yeah. That's good. That's good.
So what's the Blood Bowl scene like in Germany? Many leagues around, or do people mostly play in tournaments?
Oh, I think we've got many hidden leagues.
Right.
We've got a big league in Kassel going on. It's 30 players plus. Well, that's very amazing, but you don't get that much from the leagues if you don't take part in the leagues. And the tournament scene is, there is some tournaments in the south, but they're from the south, from Bavaria, don't travel that often to the north, to us.
Oh, okay.
And there is two spots. If you're in the north, northwest, you come to us. There is Klingon. Klingon is going on the 22nd time this year.
Wow.
two times a year. They got 20 coaches normally.
Right, okay.
Two times a year. That's very, very good. Michael's doing a great job with Klingon.
Yeah.
And we've got very, very many annual tournaments, very, very often. I think the Ghost Bowl is running about 7-6 time, 9th maybe.
Yeah. I thought Ghost Bowl was more than that. I thought Ghost Bowl was up to 16 or something.
Yeah, but it could be.
Because they must have done it a couple of times a year as well.
Yeah, okay. I do on my homepage for my tournament, the Sturm der Hebe.
All right.
We've got the German Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Where I've tracked down 133 Blood Bowl tournaments in Germany with a winner, with a runner-up.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing it should have on the NAF.
Yeah.
Shouldn't it, really?
Shouldn't. But the NAF can't get track who's won if nobody tells them.
Yeah. Hopefully, there'll be a new website at some point. Each tournament will have winner, runner-up, most casualties, most touchdowns.
Yeah.
Stunty Cup, who knows?
I've spent 2 or 3 weekends to track down games from 2003 to 2004, searching the forums for the results.
Because all the information's there.
The information is there. You must collect them.
Yeah.
And sometimes I've watched a player. We have in a forum, they have the opportunity to post, hey, I've won this tournament.
Yeah.
And then I've looked, okay, he's 6-0. He probably have won that. That's the only information I've got from that tournament.
Yeah.
But okay, I tracked that down.
Yeah, there's no obligation on a tournament organizer to tell anyone who's won. There's no official form or anything like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's the German forum? Where do people go for information about German tournaments? Is it just the NAF, or is there somewhere?
No, the NAF is not the right spot. We've managed to get the Dungeon Bowl, the German Blood Bowl community. We do something, but actually it's for the online league right now.
Okay.
But we're working behind the scenes to get that really started, that forum works for everyone. Everyone can work right now there. But don't ask me about the URL right now. It's Deutsche Blood Bowl Community.
Something. Okay.
Search it on Google, Deutsche Blood Bowl Community, and you will find us. And yeah, I think we have on enough a link to that.
Oh, okay.
But on enough, there is not much going on.
Yeah.
And Talk Fantasy Football has also no German
talk.
But there is something that's going on. I think that's the only the only opportunity to get young bloods into our hobby is online.
Yeah. And so do most German people, do they play Fumble? Do they play Cyanide? Which is...
I think the Fumble guys are very hidden. They're for their own. They're not that talk that much.
Okay.
But Cyanide, we have a big league with 200 people. Wow. The German Blood Bowl League, Deutsche Blood Bowl League.
And have you got any of those guys onto tabletop?
Yeah. I think 2 years ago, some of them swapped over, and we like to get more. And some people come, and we can bring them to the tournaments. Really, that happened.
Yeah,
that happened. Really,
that's really good. And so, in terms of German Euro Bowl, how do you pick your team for this weekend?
My team, actually.
Are you the captain?
No. I'm player number 9.
Oh, okay. Oh, so you're in Euro. You're open.
No, I'm in Euro Bowl.
Right.
Because
how are you player number 9?
Baki is has problems with his leg, and he said something 6 weeks ago.
Right.
I can't take place in that. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And he contacted me as number 9 and said, "You win." Oh, sorry. To hear about your
but
actually I'm very happy and now I slipped into the team, and all of the player has already a team, and I play Slan a lot, so I take Slan,
and no one else was playing Slan already.
Of course, Planlos is also a good Slan coach, but he's the second best player in the world right now with Lizard Man, so he have no choice.
Yes, I'm playing Lizards this weekend. Lizards are good.
I like Lizards against, because Slan.
Right. They can, because if you've got a Skink Ball Carrier, then it's vulnerable to jumping and hitting.
And I don't must play with your Sauruses.
Yeah.
I only go for the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. That's everything. Just ignore the Saurus and carry on with that. Fantastic. All right, so how's your Euro Bowl going so far?
Yeah, first round I won 2-0.
Yep.
We played against Denmark.
Yep.
In the second round, I lost a very bad game by me. I make a big mistake in the third or fourth turn. And from there, it's falling down with the dice. Very, very bad.
So Germany lost to Denmark overall, didn't they?
To Denmark, yes. To Sweden, I don't know the results by now.
Yeah.
But a second guy has lost, so...
Okay.
We won't...
Have a good second day.
good third game.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Well, that's great. Thank you very much. Hopefully this will encourage people to head over to Germany for the Dungeon Bowl and have a good time there. Brilliant.
One of the interesting things about this Euro Bowl was that there were lots of players there who had found the game from Cyanide, which is a really nice development. I think Team Norway in particular got together from lots of Cyanide players because Cyanide's quite big over there. And there were lots of players on there, lots of players at Euro Bowl who were keen to boost the involvement of Cyanide and tabletop and so on. And so part of this worked its magic on me. And so I'm brushing off my Cyanide game and having another look at it, because I tend to lurk more on Fumble when I'm looking for my online. But I've signed up for UKBBL, and that'll be an interesting thing to see how leagues work on Cyanide, because there are some absolutely massive ones on there. I put a shout out on Twitter and Facebook for the biggest Blood Bowl leagues. So we've got UKBBL and Orca Cola, the two big British ones, as far as I can tell, with between sort of 140 to 200 coaches. There's a big league on BB Tactics as well. I've mentioned BB Tactics quite a few times because there are loads of fantastic resources on there. And then once you start looking, there are some really fantastic leagues that have been going for a little while. The North American TTS BB League got in touch to make themselves known to us. Then there's the German Blood Bowl community. We talked about it a little bit in the Doc Max interview. It says they've got 200 online coaches, and it's also quite nicely where the general German Blood Bowl community hang out as well. So the former is there for arranging the national team and things like that. And that's hopefully where we're going to go, with a lot more integration between the online and tabletop communities, because to be honest, most people do play both forms of the game. That German website is also worth having a look, because they've got a lovely database of the German tournaments and who's won them previously and who's come second, who's got best paint and most casualties. And so I've made a quick rundown of the list on the NAF.net. Do have a look at it. If you'd like yours added, then just comment on the page there. Anyone can comment. And it could be quite a nice way of getting new coaches. If you could provide a little write-up of your league, you'll see the ones that are there, and those have been provided by the people that run those leagues already. And I'm happy to add more. Going on to the other way of playing online, Fumble have had a big update recently. There's a new version of the client that they use. So Fumble, for those who don't know, somehow, is a 2D representation of the game. And they have a certain amount of customization that's available. And this has just been massively increased. The Dirty Tricks cards have been put on. And as well as that, you can now use customized pitches. A few of the rule bugs have been ironed out. There weren't very many to start with, but those that are there have now been completely removed. And there's all sorts of new icons and things. So if you haven't played on Fumble for a little while, or you've never been on there, you can go on there as well. I've been using Fumble a little bit recently to dip my toe in the waters of YouTube video creation, which has been quite fun. I've just been doing a screen capture, basically, of a game that I've been involved in. And at the same time, I've been doing a commentary and trying to talk about the reasons why I do various things. So I'm not the greatest Blood Bowl coach in the world, but I think it's been helpful for a few new players, certainly, as well, to think, at least, if not to think, why is he doing that? But to think, that's the sort of thing I would do. Is it a sensible thing to do? And hopefully it's just externalizing some of the thoughts that some people have. It's been quite interesting. I've done a sort of how to sign up to Fumble and things as well. As well as that, on the NAF.net, I've made a little list of some of the most popular YouTube channels for Blood Bowl streaming. I know CK Noor, if that's how it's pronounced, streams Blood Bowl every sort of Friday night. And with the Cyanide game, it's, and something called twitch.tv, it's quite easy to stream a Blood Bowl game and then people talk about it over the top of the game, really. One of the things that attracted me to the UKB Bell in particular was their tabletop tournament that they have twice a year. And there's a report of that on the NAF.net. And this was an example of one of the Blood Bowl tournaments that happen occasionally around the world that are not NAFT ranked. And there are usually two main reasons for this. One is that some of the rule sets that people want to use for their tournaments aren't standard enough for NAF ranking, for NAF approval, I suppose, NAF sanctioning, that's the word. A good version of this is Stunty Slam, which takes place in Manchester every October. This is just a one-day tournament, and as the same name suggests, it's just Stunty teams. Because it's just Stunty teams, that can affect the rankings in a slightly strange way, and so it doesn't get NAF sanctioning, and so the results aren't recorded on the website. But you never know, if different types of tournament get sanctioned, different types of tournament get classified on the website, it might be that Stunty only tournaments is another version of that, might be worth looking into. But the other reason for not being sanctioned is that NAF tournaments need to, so you can't just have two or three mates gathered together and artificially boost your rankings. You need to publicize it 6 weeks in advance, you need to publicize it widely and make it that anyone who wants to go along can go along. And the UK BBL tournament is, as the name suggests, just for those who are in the UK BBL league, and so it doesn't meet for NAF sanctioning. I don't think it's been applied for particularly, but that's one of the reasons why it wouldn't be possible. So I think that's pretty much a good roundup of the news from the Blood Bowl world over the last month or so. I'm very much looking forward to the rules coming out for the World Cup next year. Looking forward to the road to NAF on Fumble starting off, which is going to happen in the new year as well. And looking forward to Christmas, where I'm getting my son his first Blood Bowl team, which is going to be lots of fun. Going with Chaos Dwarves, which I don't think is too power gamey. They are one of the best teams, but one of the reasons I chose them is because they're quite easy to paint, with lots of beards and armour, but also a little bit of opportunities for some probably multicoloured hobgoblins, I would guess. So have a fantastic Christmas, everyone, and 2015 is looking to be a very exciting year for Blood Bowl all around. Have a great one. Thank you for listening to the NAFcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can find us on Twitter at OfficialNAF, on Facebook at OfficialNAF, and you can email us on OfficialNAF@gmail.com.